You're listening to the 8-4 Comics Podcast, sponsored by StashMyComics.com and our local comic book shop in Roanoke, Virginia, BNDComics.com. And now, here's your hosts, Matt Barrett and Neil Rickman.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to 8-4 Comics Podcast, Episode 2. Now, I'm your host, Matt Barrett, and with me again is...
Neil Rickman.
That's Neil Rickman. And we like to talk about comics, so much so that every week we trade comics. We do the comic swap. I give Neil a book, he gives me a book, we read them, come back on the show and talk about them. Neil, what do we have in store this week?
Well, I've got from you a little ditty called Batgirl 17 from back in March 2011.
Correct. One of my favorite books ever. That's saying a lot. And from you, I got Daredevil 10.1, which you said was a great jumping on point, and you were correct.
Yeah, Daredevil 10.1 is pretty fantastic. The point ones made me wonder a little bit about, what's going on here? And I didn't realize at the time when they started popping out that it was basically jump on points that Marvel was doing to kind of, I guess, compete with the New 52.
Yeah, zeros, 10.1s, all these type of things. Really confused me, but... You're right, that was a great jumping on point. It was a good chance for me to read Daredevil. So, before we get into the reviews, I figure we'd do a little chat about a conversation we were having earlier. This is about DC's number zero issues. You indicated to me that you would be picking some of these up. I indicated sort of the opposite, and I was curious which ones you were going to be picking up and why.
Any DC I'm reading, I'm doing. It's just a thing that they've been doing. DC... has really made me go after their annuals. I'm usually not a big annual guy, but they've been tying a lot of things into it. I'm not sure how I like that. Although, I will say that if it's good and it's written well, which the annuals for the most part for me have been, then I don't mind paying for it. The annuals of the past days, of recent past, have kind of been throwaways in my opinion. It's usually not the same creators working on it or whatnot. But with the New 52, it feels like they're really trying to work in the actual teams that worked on these books.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the teams are also sticking around for the zero issues, right? They didn't change those up a whole lot?
I think it's supposed to be the same teams for the most part. I know the ones I'm looking forward to, especially the Justice League Zero, which we're going to see, Billy Batson finally realized as Shazam. For anybody that's been reading that, that has been a phenomenal run. And I've been enjoying that backup story to Justice League more than Justice League itself. Not that Justice League is bad, per se, but that's just that, Shazam's been so good.
Yeah, and he is strictly Shazam now, correct?
Right. Well, they decided to get away from all the confusion of having been Captain Marvel. And, so many people love to just shout Shazam, Shazam. I do in my daily work, I know, almost. I go get a Slurpee, Shazam. I go to the kitchen to get a drink, Shazam. I just love the word. So it's almost like a Gomer Pyle thing at that point. But
yeah, it is super confusing having one of your major characters named Captain and then the other company's name. It'd be like akin to Marvel having one of their characters named General DC or something stupid like that. So good move on their part. You're right. As kids, we all just thought he was Shazam anyway, so let's just cut the middleman out. Well, I'm not getting zero issues just because I'm kind of a not like to go back in time kind of guy. I'm not saying that this is as bad as something, say, like the Star Wars prequels, but now you know my opinion on those. It is going back, and I don't like to rewind a whole lot. I like where the stories are going, and this is a good chance for me to take a little break from DC, maybe pick up a few new things and see how I like those, and then jump back on for 13. And speaking of 13th issue, let's stick with the ape theme. We got Gorilla Grodd coming back in Flash, and I'm super excited about that. It's enough to make me pick up Flash again.
Had
I know
you
you're already
it?
Reading it. I had dropped, well, I didn't pick it up when the New 52 came out. I was reading it before the New 52 came out.
Gotcha.
So I dropped it somewhere towards the end of that. It was still Francis Manapul, and it was essentially the same type
right,
of book.
Right, but it was him with Jeff Johns, I believe, and now it's just him.
Okay.
Well, I know he's got some help, but he's the main force behind it at this point.
Do you find? Did you read the one before it?
I did, and I've been, it's been hit or miss with me because keep in mind I'm a guy who's read Flash for the villains. I love the Scarlet Speeds, don't get me wrong, but his rogues are my favorite. As far as okay, you've got cabinets of villains. Spider-Man has a great cabinet of villains, so does Batman. But for me, I've always liked how personal Flash could get with his villains. It was always kind of a, he almost had kind of a kinship with some of these guys where it was almost like, hey, cut that out. You know, we've talked about this. It was just a really weird relationship he has with his villains, it feels like.
Agreed. Okay, well, and speaking of Gorilla Grodd, you told me a story early on when I met about how you ran a race with a Gorilla Grodd costume on.
It was a Relay for Life, actually.
Okay.
I was doing a Relay for Life, and I'd put on a gorilla suit, and I had a Flash T-shirt over it. And unbeknownst to me, a great parent somewhere out there had educated their kids as to Flash. So I actually had a kid run up to me, and you know, he told me, you don't fool me. And I was like, what's that? And he goes, you're Gorilla Grodd. And about that time, he socked me in the unmentionables. And not intentionally. That's just his height. You know, he just swung at me, and that's where he happened to hit. So it was I finished my relay all but with a limp.
And like we mentioned, it was kind of cool that he actually knew who you were, but not so cool that he reacted in such a way that caused you physical harm.
And he was just doing his job as a good citizen, you know? He was trying to fight crime the best way he knew.
All right. Well, we'll leave it at that, and we'll go into our next segment called Comic Swap, where we review books.
Comic Swap.
We're going to do Batgirl 17 first. Is that what we agreed upon?
Yes, Batgirl 17. I'd mentioned before, that's the March 2011 issue for Batgirl. That's back when Stephanie Brown was donning the cowl there. That's before the New 52. It was written by Brian Q. Miller with art by Pierre Perez. Guy Major on the colors, and then a great, fantastic cover. Some were a fan of this, some weren't, of Dustin Nguyen, I think that's how you might say his name.
Yeah.
And it's the covers that had the white backgrounds, and they just really popped, and I thought it was just beautiful.
Yeah, I too was a fan of those, and I'm a fan of anything using white space. If anybody that knows me knows that whenever I point to design and designs that I like, I can always point to Apple. They're very white space friendly. It makes what you're trying to put out there really pop, and I loved all of those covers so much so that I think when they came out I was tempted just to get all of them just for the covers. I thought they looked really cool, like hung on your wall or something, just all the titles like that.
Right.
Now you'll have to refresh me on the plot on this. It's been a while since I've read it, even though it is one of my favorite issues. But we start out with Damian Wayne, and he's getting a little talking to by Daddy Alfred.
It's a current problem with him, and it was even back then, where Damian is, he never really had a childhood, and it's explored throughout this book. But in the beginning of this, Alfred's coming to bring him some breakfast, and he's expecting him to be there. I don't know why he would expect that, because father like son type deal, where okay, Master Wayne's not in bed, neither is Damian. He's trying to be his dad so much that he figures he doesn't have to sleep either. And the Bat family is a little worried. This is a kid who not only was raised by assassins, but now he's in the world of vigilantism. And I guess it's because his dad's trying to direct something that's already been embedded in him into a good direction, if it has to be there at all.
Right. And I think, you know, one thing that's never brought up is perhaps even, you know, Batman is staving off a future enemy against himself. I mean, if Damian goes down that dark path, who's the person that he's going to go after? If his dad is not involved in his life and doesn't show some love, Damian has no reason not to try to take out his father. And I imagine he would be a pretty formidable opponent.
Yeah, and I get the sense that, you know, he's still trying very much to really be his father. You know, of course he wants to cut off any hatred of him before that can, you know, happen. But it's just everybody in the family is really worried about him, and he just always tries to be the overachiever. He's got everything to prove, he feels like, and he's out there doing it at any cost. And he's honestly the scariest person in the Bat family, and that says a lot, to me at least. He surpasses Batman because he just doesn't have that restraint. He doesn't have that discipline, and he's got all the skill, and he's like 10 years old.
You're right. And what's particularly great about this issue in particular is by putting these two together, you have the polar opposites. I think you have the darkest spot of the Bat family. And then at this time, perhaps the brightest, Stephanie Brown is a well-rounded young lady. Her mom is very involved in her life. She's still very much a young woman. I believe she's in college throughout these issues. And she does have some communication with Oracle. She helps her out.
I'll tell you, I was on for the Cassandra Cain, which was the Batgirl right before her. And when they got rid of her, I was kind of throwing a little fuddy. And I was like, aw, they got rid of my Batgirl. So I didn't join on with this. And reading this, I really wish I had. I'm a big Blue Beetle fan, and I was talking to you a little bit about how she just really seemed like, you know, Blue Beetle I've always looked at as the poor man's Batman who's upbeat.
Right.
And Stephanie Brown to me seems very much the upbeat, very improvisational mm-hmm. Bat character of the Bat family. She's not, you know, your first choice by any means, but she's the choice you're going to get sometimes.
Right.
And she makes sure that choice is one that you're going to survive the night. She figures a way to do it. And she doesn't have these elaborate plans in her head. Usually it's all off the, you know, the seat of her pants type thing. And she's making sure throughout this issue, at least, that Damien's not slaughtering people in front of children. It ends up, they're both staking out the same, spy for this kidnapping ring, and they end up kind of in it together, and there's a school bus involved, I'll say, and Damien's kind of wanting to do these drastic things, and she throughout it is trying to temper that as best she can.
Yeah, she's playing the role of babysitter, which is hilarious because Damien fights it kicking and screaming. And what I like about, and I'm not going to give away the ending, but There is sort of a moment here where she's able to pry a little bit of youth out of him to show that he's not completely dead inside when it comes to a lost childhood.
Yeah, it really shows she's got a lot of heart. She wears that heart, I think. And I want to see more of her now. Like, I'm like dying to see more of her, and I don't, like I think you said, she's not around in New 52, but she ends up, she's really concerned for Damien. I don't know how well she knows him at this point at all, but she's concerned for him. I mean,
yeah.
She's just a very caring person wearing the cowl. And I know that the others are too. I mean, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing if they didn't care, but she really wears that. And, yeah, there's some situations here where Damien, it really shows how, I guess, the lack of social skills he has gotten. It's all been about attack and fight and figure things out and just being a vigilante and assassin. He's kind of put in a situation, I'll just go this far and say, with a lot of his own age group, and he really sticks out. It's a little bit interesting to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, when he's with the kids of his own age, the art is done so beautifully because he just has this scowl on his face, and even though he's the same size as these kids, he just looks really awkward and out of place and angry, and you've got other little kids trying to, like, come on, let's play, and he has no idea what that concept is. And Batgirl, of course, feels sorry for him and tries to bring some of that out in him. I know a lot of people that really liked this issue and wanted to see more interaction between them, and I can't say I disagree. I hope that we get her back in the New 52, even if it has to be spoiler, even if it has to be some sort of Batgirl in Earth 2. But I definitely got to have Brian Q. Miller writing this. He has her voice. He created her voice. And with the exception of maybe like a Gail Simone, who I guess they're pretty good friends anyways, he writes her in such a way that I could see Gail taking her on and being okay with it. But anybody else, I don't know if they could find her voice like he did.
It'd be interesting. What is he working on now? Do you know? What's he into?
He's the last I heard in terms of DC. He's doing the new Smallville digital only book. So I guess it's when did Smallville end? Season 9 or something?
Right. I think they were getting hardcovers of that actually at B&D. Or like, you know, physical, not hardcovers, but physical copies.
Okay, you're right. Yeah, when it first came out, I guess it was digital only, and now that they've got some under their belt. And I believe they're digitally a little bit cheaper because they come out digitally first.
Right.
And now, then release them in full.
Do you know exactly how that is at all? I know a lot of people were excited. The Smallville fans, you know, would come in and they were very excited to get a hold of this. They hated that Smallville was ending. And I'm wondering, he is very good at dialogue. And I'm wondering how well he is doing with Smallville right now, because after reading this Batgirl issue, which is going to get very high marks for me, you know, by the time we do our review here, I can't see it not being good, I guess, unless they're heavily sitting on him editor wise. But
yeah, the only reason I haven't picked it up is because I haven't finished Smallville, and I don't want to. I feel like I don't want to pick this up until I know what happened with Smallville. I'm really only like within like the end of the second season, so I've got a ways to go.
That's one of the media things that I get a lot of flack about. I've never stepped into it, but I've always wanted to.
Right.
And a lot of people are like, you haven't watched this? And I'm like, I haven't.
It's really good. It's just I don't have a lot of time to sit through 9 seasons of anything. And I started on it really good. They had a bunch of it in my library. We were watching it together as a family. I mean, it's even a decent family show. But like I said, time constraints. So, you know, maybe picking up the comic would be a good idea. I mean, I pretty much know the Superman tale. Smallville, I think, is pretty faithful to it in some aspects. I mean, we know that he becomes Superman. We know that much. And I know that Stephanie Brown has some sort of role in the Smallville book. I want to say she's a Robin for like one issue or something.
Well, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. But I know people were disappointed that they didn't see her more. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, I really want her, after reading this, I really want her brought back. And you'd been talking to me about it. I was like, you know, I like Cassandra Cain. She kicks so much butt. How good could this go? She's awesome. And were the rest of the issues on this run akin to this? I mean, I know this is a standout issue.
Yeah.
But it kept a pretty good dialogue, you're saying.
Yeah, no, they're all very good. I have most of them. I don't have the complete run, but I'll certainly loan you what I have. I think what I need to get is the first trade, and then I pretty much have everything else. I've got like issue 1 and 2, and I'm missing a whole, and then I start back up. But anyways, you're welcome to borrow what I have. What do you give this scale of 1 to 10? Obviously, for me, this is a 10 out of 10. This is one of my favorite reads of all time. But what do you give it?
All right. I came into this. I mean, this is issue 17. And I came into the middle of this. I was able to... now, granted, I'm an avid comic reader, so I understood who Damian was right off the bat. I mean, that's just me. For new readers, I would give it a solid 9, even for new readers. I'm going to give it a 10. You know, I know we're agreeing a lot here with these first couple of runs.
Right.
But, I mean, it is what it is. They deal with a lot, the dialogue so well. It's got some fantastic art and color to it, and it's just a very enjoyable. It's a fulfilling experience by the end of this book.
Right.
It's a little touching. It's a little melancholy, even. You really have to think about exactly how old Damian is at that point, because you lose it a lot. I know I do reading these.
Mm-hmm.
You figure, oh, it's just a little guy flying around. No, that's a kid.
Yeah.
That's a kid flying around out there. And, I mean, there's some serious stuff going down. And when put in the situation he's put in this book, it is a little heart-wrenching. So, you know, maybe get the tissues. I don't know. I mean, it's a little telling, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, you know, 10 out of 10 for me. If you guys haven't read this, definitely pick it up. pick up the whole run. Brian K. Miller does the whole thing, and the art is pretty fantastic in just about all of it. So hopefully we'll see her back soon. We're going to move on to our next book, and this is Daredevil 10.1. So we got writer Mark Waid. We've got art by Koi Pham. Am I saying this right?
Yes, I believe that's how you say it.
And I think it's important to mention the color artist, because that was my first thing that I noticed when reading this was, wow, the colors. This is a bright Daredevil, something we haven't seen in quite a while.
Yeah, it's such a classic feel, in my opinion, that it's brought to this book by the art and color.
Yeah, it takes you back in time. You know, you've got not only the bright colors, but the white panels. I know Daredevil was pretty heavy with the black panels, was he not?
Yeah, he's went through some phases. I mean, again, it's so drastic because they're coming off such a dark period with this run of Daredevil, and everything's been pretty bright. There's been a few issues where they dealt with Mole Man. I won't give anything away but that, but they got a little dark in the coloring because you're underground.
Right.
It got pretty dark there. But I would say that they do a lot with just the art and how Matt Murdock interprets the world.
Yeah, so, you know, plot-wise, we've got, like you said, great jumping on point. We've got Matt Murdock coming in and helping this criminal out. He has called for a lawyer, and he is in this really restrictive place. It is, I guess, a security holdings for metahumans.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Was this on the raft, maybe, or was it Rikers? Or that, you know, it's one of the super prisons for sure.
And this guy has fire powers, and he's being kept at bay by not only constant temperature changes within this place, but also a very loud noise, which, of course, Daredevil's going to pick up on right away.
Yeah. The thing a lot of people don't get, I think, about Daredevil is, yes, he's got these insanely crazy heightened senses, but what has always driven the character for me is the discipline that was built into him through the training he's had by, I mean, he's had ninja training. This guy, and Bendis really showed it off in some of his older stuff, but some of it shines through here because he's having to play it off that he has these senses in the middle of this loud pitch noise that's going on throughout the room.
Yeah, and they make it very clear that he is really affected by this, and we start to see him break down as this criminal is telling his story about basically how he got captured, which, oddly enough, is by Daredevil himself. And he embellishes some things along the way, but we get to sort of, this is where the action comes into play. This is where we get to see Daredevil do what he does. And I really like the fact that Matt Murdock is keeping cool. He is obviously very bothered by the situation that this guy is in. And what we find out towards the end, without giving too much away, is that he totally agrees with this guy. Even though this guy tried to kill him a couple times, he agrees that this is a bad situation for any criminal to be in. This is cruel and unusual punishment. And he would know better than anybody because he has such heightened senses.
Right. And it's great to see him. There was a while back when it came out, and it was pretty solid evidence that was made public that Matt Murdock is Daredevil. Well, he still plays it off that he's not. And most criminals, you know, swear up and down he is. And so this guy knows he was caught by Daredevil, and the rumor's out there that it's Matt Murdock, which is his attorney coming in the room. But the thing about Matt is, even though he's balancing all this, he's trying to make sure that he can throw off any suspicion that he's Daredevil, he's really trying to make life better for this scumbag.
And I guess that's the hard part about being a lawyer and a superhero.
Yeah, it's insane. He's one of the only heroes I can think of he'll play to the letter of the law, even if it means sacrificing parts of himself.
Exactly.
And I guess that's why he's been driven a little insane, because it's very hard to maintain that as a vigilante.
Yeah. And so that whole thing ends, and we sort of get a taste of a mini event with called the Omega Drive, which I was a little familiar with because I was reading Punisher at the time that came out. So while I think a new reader might be fine with the first part of the story, maybe a little confused with the second half, but it's not too hard to get. He has something that can incriminate a lot of criminals, and he's sort of keeping this in his back pocket because he's worried about his life. And it's an odd sort of conflict that Daredevil has, in that he should by all rights give away this Omega Drive to the authorities and have all these criminals busted. But at the same time, if he does that, he's going to be dead.
And right.
That's interesting.
Well, we talk a little bit about the core of this character, and he is a no-holds-barred. I mean, his dad was, you know, battling Jack Murdock. He comes from a very rugged background. They don't give up, the Murdocks. They will see any fight through. And this guy, okay, he's got heightened heightened senses, but his body's human. I mean, this is just a guy. He's at peak physical condition for, you know, most of the heroes that don't have powers are, but he's swinging around New York, and unlike Spider-Man or someone, if he fell, he's not going to live through that.
Yeah.
And he's just swinging around and he's always been a very interesting character to me. And then in some runs more than other.
Right.
And you'll find that Mark Waid has done a fantastic job of putting the character out there and showing everything that makes him interesting to me. From his dual personality as a lawyer, as a vigilante, to how his powers affect him and the world around him. Everything is played to, and you get to see everything that makes a character interesting. Because a character that doesn't have all the crazy powers, it can be dull if you get the wrong writer or team on it. But the artists that he's had a great cabinet of artists work on him with this, and it's all been, I don't know how you feel, but on this issue, but it's enough to, I think, make folks go out there. Do you think you would go out and get it based on this issue?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if I was able to extend my pull list beyond what it is, which it has shrunk over the last year, so I've been trying to really budget myself, but, you know, the fact is, this is a $2.99 book, and it's gorgeous. And the storytelling's good. And I like books that are bright. I think those seem to be just a much more fun read. It's more pleasing to the eye. You don't have to squint quite as much. It feels a little more cartoony, and I like that style. So I would give this an easy 8.5 out of 10. The only thing that might hold it back is, as a jumping-on issue, I think the Omega Drive stuff is a tiny bit confusing and takes you away just a little bit. But other than that, you know, I can see why everybody's talking about this particular Daredevil run.
Yeah, and I would give it around, and this is for me, I've got a reason of why I'll give it around, I would say 7.5 to 8. You might go, what? He's just preached his book up and down. But I'm holding it in light of the current run entirely. And they had to step out for a minute. They wanted to get some new readers in if they wanted it, and I thought that was great. But all the issues around this are even better. I mean, it's just because, it's pretty much the first part of this is to get new readers in, and then you kind of ease back into where you were as a regular reader.
Right.
And it's just been, you come off the Shadowland that really was the downfall of the run that Diggle ended up. Diggle was doing a decent job, I would say, until Shadowland came about and it went downhill, I thought. And some people might have liked it. I'm not saying it's, you know, my opinion's the absolute here. But I really feel like they rebounded heavy with this run.
Okay. Well, that does it. That wraps it up for our comic swap this week. Now, next week, I've got you reading Extreme X-Men number 1.
Oh, yeah.
And then you've got me covering the Casey Jones IDW. What's the title? I don't have it right in front
of me. It's the Micro Series. It's just the Micro Series has been covering every character has had their issue. And the Casey Jones issue jumped out at me. Well, I'm a Casey Jones fan because of the Lessons Pain 101, of course. I mean, I don't care what version of Casey Jones. We're talking old movie. We're talking cartoon where he's just breaking stuff like Clint Eastwood voiced. And anything Casey Jones I really loved. And I thought that issue was the best, maybe the best Turtles issue yet in the run. That's been the run from IDW has been great anyway. And the Micro Series is right there with it. It's a great companion to the regular title. But that issue, you know, it dealt with some real life, pains, maybe.
Yeah, it did. And we'll get on that next week. So if you guys haven't picked those up, you should pick both of those up so you know exactly what we're talking about. Actually, you don't have to.
But well, anyways, you know, I would run right out to my local log cabin comic shop, perhaps, if you're in the Roanoke, Virginia. So
perhaps B&D Comics?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll wrap that up and go into our special feature. Now, as promised, last week we mentioned, you mentioned how you were really sick and you read a bunch of Moon Knights that really made you feel awful. And so we thought it might be fun to talk about books that might make you feel better while you're sick. But I came up with a couple that also might make you feel awful. But if you're on enough medications, these books might be kind of a nice little weird space for you to go to.
That's a very odd way of going about it. I guess to each their own.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes when you're sick and you're feeling all weird, you want to go to dark places. Other times when you're sick, you want to go to bright places. That's just my take.
I always want to go to bright. I don't know what you're doing over there, Matt.
Well, most of us just want to go to bed, I think. But
Matt's over here. I'm a little frightened. He's got a darkness inside him, I think, that I'm not sure where it's coming from. But.
Well, the dark books that I picked, and I don't know why these came to me. And to be honest with you, I haven't been sick a lot lately, which is nice. But these books stepped out of me as to something, for some reason, I would read when I was sick. Have you read any of the Xenoscope Grim Fairy Tales stuff?
I flipped through a few and I've read a little bit here and there, but it was never something that I just grabbed and said, "Hey, Neil, read this." I don't know. I'll be honest. I was a little, I was like, the art in it was a bit much for me. it shows off the woman very much, to say the least.
Well, I have the first trade of it and I like it just because I like fairy tales and I like fairy tales told in more the way they were intended to. Now, you could go off and you could just read fables, I know, but that's sort of a lot to get into when you're talking about fairy tales. These Grimm fairy tales are nice because they're sort of one-and-done stories. And to me, I don't know, something about being sick and reading some creepy fairy tales just kind of seemed interesting to me if you're in the right mood. However, I do have a bright book, and if you're sick and you're feeling down, I think you can't do any better than a Tiny Titans book.
Oh, nice. Oh, man. Yes. That's awesome.
Love the Tiny Titans books.
Yeah, I actually met Franco in Baltimore, and he was doing dollar crayon sketches. And I had him do a version of Tiny Titan Catman.
So, oh, awesome.
In my sketchbook. Yeah, it's always awesome. That guy was making, like, some, I don't know if he was where he was going with all those ones. But he was making hand over fist just $1 bills, which looked like a lot more than it probably was.
Right.
It was all ones, but it was dollar crayon sketches. Yeah.
Now we'll have to post this on the site. You'll have to give it. Can you scan it so we can post it? We'll take a picture of it.
Sure. I could do that.
Did you send it to Gail Simone?
I didn't. I should
you
have.
You need to. Yeah.
Yeah. It almost did Captain Cold, but then I was like, man, Catman, it's got to happen.
Let's get off subject here for just a second. Catman, New 52, where is he?
I don't know. I hope he's not just large and on the sofa again.
Oh,
really?
Gosh.
She brought him back only for them to put him back. I don't know. There's a lot of characters we're wondering about there.
Yeah. All right, well, back on track. Give me one of your books. Book you like to read when you're sick.
I've got one. And it's the only one you're going to need.
Okay.
Bone.
Oh, Bone. Okay.
Jeff Smith's Bone. And you know what? It's unfair because I'll pull Bone out. You know, best title, you know, from beginning to end, Bone. You know, just right. Bone is a true all ages book, no matter if you're a child, an adult, and if you're feeling bad. It's got an epicness to it, but there's so much just lighthearted comedy. You feel like you're in the golden era of Disney at some points of this book. And I honestly think there's some parts of Bone that if I were sick, I could get up and start lifting steel girders after having read. So I think that's just, I mean, it's better than OJ. It's the vitamin C of comics. Jeff Smith, fantastic guy. Met him in Columbus, sorry. Met him in Columbus, and his niceness shines throughout that book. It's a very lighthearted, it's got some darkness here and there, but overall the epic journey is tempered with just a very interesting sense of humor.
Hmm. Okay.
Throughout, yeah, it's a throwback to a lot of old, I would say, cartoons even. Because I don't know if you know anything about Jeff Smith, where he started as an animator.
Okay.
You know, so his background started in things like Disney and old Warner Brothers and things like that.
I've heard Bone mentioned highly by many other people and
have you not podcasts. Read it?
I have not read it. None of it.
Oh my gosh!
Is this the next thing I'm receiving?
Well, I can't say. There's books. Oh, there's things that I. All right. You know, there's things that a lot of people, like, I haven't read Preacher, and a lot of people are like, you haven't read Preacher, and I mean, yeah. Just, you can't read them all.
Yeah.
But if I was going to, I sold a lot of Bone when I worked at B&D, because anybody that had, and it was like gangbusters, and it was an all-ages book. If someone was looking for, you know, a nephew or a daughter or a grand, you know, son or girl, you know, it's just...
Hmm.
Grandson or girl, granddaughter. Sorry, sometimes I forget how to speak because there's a microphone here.
That's, you know, and that I just had an idea, an epiphany. Next week for our special feature, we should talk about books that we should have read but we have never read.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah,
a couple weeks ago for me that was Sandman. I had never read any of the Sandman, and it was one of those, what is wrong with you? But I just hadn't got around to it, and I found it at our local library, the first three books.
Now, did you tell me that you did enjoy it? Somebody thought it might be too dated for someone to come in now, but I disagreed. Now, what did you think?
No, because I'm also a fan of some of the older Swamp things, it had very much that feel to it to me, and so it wasn't very jarring for me in terms of the art. When I first read those Swamp things, what is his name? Alan Moore ones. The art in that, when I first picked it up, I was like, whoa, what is this?
It was a bad whoa. You
for
were like,
a second,
hold on.
But then it really worked with that sort of horror kind of story, and I began to really like that art. And this is very much the same kind of art, and man, what an out there tale, though.
It was Sam Keith working on that, I think, you know, from the old, yep. The old Max artist. You know, he started working with Neil Gaiman back on that old Vertigo series.
Yeah, and when I heard Sandman was coming back, I kind of decided, okay, I really have to read this now, because if it comes back and I want to pick it up, I got to know, have some sense of what's going on here. And I can't say 100% I know exactly what I read, to be honest with you. There's some stuff in there that I'm just like, I don't understand.
You talking Sandman here?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and Neil Gaiman's not as bad as some other, like Alan Moore really can throw you for a loop. But yeah, there are some areas still where... It's a bit of a mind trip.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, the last book I had on my list, and I've never read this one. I've been sick, but I thought I would like it because it's one of my favorite books. It's very sci-fi, but it also has a bit of humor to it and an endearing raccoon. The 2008 Guardians of Galaxy run, which went in somewhere in the 20s. I don't remember. I've just got the first couple trades of it, and... Really enjoy those. Anything Rocket Raccoon makes
Thanks.
Me smile.
Now I got to go dig out my trades and finish that, because that's one of the things that's on top of my list. I had bought the trades and just not finished it, and I need to finish that out.
Especially now with it seeming like it's going to come back. So.
Well, a walking, talking raccoon with guns is so up my alley. If you know me, you know that, oh my gosh, Neil loves this character because it's an animomorphic character, and no, I'm not a furry, but I like animals a lot. So animals that are, you know, taken up for themselves, be it large laser cannons, you know, that strikes home with me.
Now I'm going to definitely have to loan you. You might already have it because you're a Hulk guy. Do you have, it's an old 70s Hulk comic where Rocket Raccoon makes a guest appearance.
No.
Yeah.
It's
epic.
Oh my gosh!
And
you're
it's an
me in so much trouble.
Issue. That's the problem.
Oh my! He's got me. I had sworn off the current run of Hulk because I just wasn't interested. He says ramp back up. Now I've got to go catch back up on it. I think you're bad for my health, Matt, or bad for my wallet, Redder. My health is fine. I'm very in good spirits because of these books, but my wallet's crying.
I know. Well, I'm going to have to drop some things to pick up some things. Some of this new Marvel. I mean, I'm on a tight budget now. I'm really trying to get a budget that I'm going to stick to, and I'm trying to force myself to go back and read some of the stuff I've, you know, purchased within the past few years. And it's hard when you're trimming down and all these great things are coming out. You have to make some hard choices.
Yeah, it is tough. I think I go a little too crazy with it sometimes, but it's a love. It's a passion. I think for most people that are into the hobby, you know, it's not even a hobby. It's kind of more of a lifestyle for me. I don't know about for you, but, mm-hmm. It's become just so ingrained in me. I mean, you know, I don't know if you grew up and your mom said, oh, you grew out of that. My mom swore up and down, oh, you're going to grow out of them books. And I don't know whether I kept in it despite her or not. I don't really think so. I just had love for it. And she used to be surprised that I was still doing it for a minute. And now with all the movies coming and everything, she's enjoying it some too. So.
Right. No, it's definitely, you're right. It's a passion and it's a lifestyle. And it carries on into lots of different things, toys and movies and merchandise. And but for me, it's my favorite escape. You know, even more than watching a movie or television, I'll pick up a comic book, and I just, because I have a hard time reading, like I don't read a lot of books, this is the way that I read. Maybe I'm juvenile in that sense that I still have to see pictures, but the artist in me likes seeing the art, and I don't mind the dialogue-heavy books because there's something to look at to sort of break up the heavy dialogue.
Your imagination's allowed to play. I mean, to an extent. I mean, granted, you've got everything there on the page painted out for you, but you get to decide on just how that motion would fly, I guess is what I'm saying, from panel to panel.
Right.
It can go any which way. I mean, you could even make up your own panels in your mind. It's just, with movies and stuff, it's set in stone. It's there. You're just kind of on cruise control. With this, there's a bit more to it. You know, you can think, well, what if this character did this or that? And sure, you could do that with some movie characters, but it's a lot more open, I think, to your mind. The door is a little bit more, you know, malleable, if that's a word.
I think it is.
But that's just for me. These characters, and you really, you'll pick your favorites, and you enjoy coming back to them. And they're always, you know, they'll always be there for the most part, not unless they're killed for a moment or, you know, or they cancel their series.
Yeah, it's a medium that has definitely changed. I know a lot of people are worried about it, but I really think that there's enough of a passion there that I don't think it's in any danger of going anywhere. I mean, you look at the creators that are on it. These guys don't have to write or draw comics. There's so many other avenues they can take their talents as writers. I mean, but a lot of them choose to do this, and some of them do side projects, but they still come back to this because there's a love for it, and I'm hoping that that will always stick around because of that.
Yeah, same here. And, back to, you know, you look at things like the Hulk, the classic characters, like you said, that you know are going to be around.
Right.
If you look at it, they were here when we were born, and they'll be here after, you know, we're into the dust.
Right.
So I think that's another part of it. It's kind of like we get to cruise along for the ride for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a part of something that is historic one way or the other. I mean, it's not something, it's historic to, you know, the Geek Legion, what have you. But we were a part of that.
Right.
Like the people before us that were a part of the Golden Age or the Silver Age even. I mean, it's just, they were there for that. And now we're seeing the evolution of these characters that have just, they've been around for our grandparents, you know, our great grandparents even. It's something special there. It's something. It's one of the last American frontiers to me.
Oh yeah, and I hope that it's able to finally. It seems like it's been stuck with people our age reading it growing up, and they're having a hard time getting new people to jump on. And I really hope that that changes. I try to encourage my own kids to read comics. I get them.
How does it go?
They don't not like them. It's just, you know, when you grow up with TVs and video games.
Are we getting more ADD? It's tough.
It's hard to convince them to do that over something else. But we like them to read at night, and I'll let them read, like, Tiny Titans or, you know, the kid-friendly stuff. This other stuff is way too heavy and not appropriate for them. And I think that's one thing that, just as a last thought, I think that's one thing DC and Marvel could do a lot better. They're all ages comics, tend to be very anime or follow some cartoony style. And while I think that's all well and good to a certain degree, they need to give kids more credit and realize that we were reading the more maturely drawn stuff when we were kids. We can handle it. We can handle that this guy looks realistic and he doesn't look anime, you know?
Yeah.
I think we need to see more books that are just PG that we can still pick up and be like, oh, this isn't just a book for kids. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, they do. It's a bit tough. I would say even, I had the hardest time placing the tweens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The in-betweeners that, okay, they're playing Halo, even if they shouldn't be, they're playing GTA, even right. if they shouldn't be. They don't want to be stuck over there in the all ages.
Mm-hmm.
They want to come out where there is some serious stuff going on for, the mature books.
Right.
And it's very tough to place them. Batman's a really hard one. I would say there is very, unless you hand them a copy of Brave of the Bold, which you're going to spit on.
Right.
it's hard. I usually put them in the back issues because, pre the really darkness, you go back to where he's just, him and Robin are just kind of kicking it or whatever.
Right.
And it's tough for the tweens.
Yeah.
I think the comic companies are having a really hard time putting it on there. There are some teen books. But if they hear it's anything but what dad's reading, you got to watch with that. So it's almost like weird for us to have an all ages, but we need it.
Yeah.
You don't want to say all eight. You definitely don't want to say the kids section.
Right. Right.
all ages was the line we used a lot. But I think the boss was steering me before I left, towards saying the everybody books. Right. Everybody reads these, sure. Everybody's doing that, that's where Bone was. That's where a lot of my favorite titles actually were. It was like mm-hmm. Mouse Guard, which I would say that's a great tween book if they like Lord of the Rings at all or anything fantasy.
Right.
But definitely not for too young. It deals with some life-death issues that some kids might not be ready for. And then, like, Stuff of Legend, that was a really... There's some really good books, but they're just not these big movie blockbusters that might drive some of the tweens in there. They're, everybody's looking at Dark Knight, which I don't know that I would take a young kid to see Dark Knight.
No.
And it's, it's all preference. Some parents have readied their children maybe for it. Maybe they are ready, but it's tough. Avengers, even.
Mm-hmm.
The Avengers is one of those teams that has a lot of history. And then when you try to place them in a book, it's like, well,
yeah, a lot going on. Well, we're reaching our time ceiling here. We try to keep it in the 45-minute range. So we'll wrap this up. Be sure to go to our sponsors, bnddcomics.com. That's our local comic book shop. Go see why they've been in business for over 30 years. They know how to do it right. And stashmycomics.com, a great place to go if you want to catalog your collection for free and read a whole bunch of awesome content. Stashmycomics.com, powered by Geek Energy. So, and we have a website too, ape4comics.com. Go there and maybe you'll check out Neil's picture of a crayon-drawn Catman. Correct?
Yeah, it's okay. It's fantastic.
All right, we'll get that up there. Thank you,
Crayola
guys.
Crayola rocks. Sorry.
And I'm going to make you send it to Gail Simone, too.
All right.
All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Thank you, Bob.
1, 2, 3. StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.